The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky. On this week's podcast, we find out all about the details of the UK launch of the film service Netflix from Neil Hunt, their chief product officer. And we've got the latest headlines making the waves elsewhere in the technology space, so keep listening to the next 30 minutes of Tech Weekly from The Guardian. While most technology attentions are pointed towards the Consumer Electronics Show in the United States desert, this week we've also got news closer to home. Netflix, the US-based film service, which isn't too dissimilar from the UK's Love Film, but without the DVD delivery service, announced that they are coming to the UK. Netflix's new approach is to stream their content to any device, pick a flick and get it immediately anywhere that you have internet access. Producer Scott Colley met Neil Hunt, Netflix's chief product officer, to find out more about what's on offer and how they plan to succeed in the UK market.
It's a subscription service, and for £5.99 a month, or €6.99 in Ireland, you get a subscription that gives you unlimited viewing. Anything that's in our catalogue, on any device, as often as you want, and unlimited hours. There's a free trial, so everyone can give this a try for a month for free. And it's a no-commitment subscription, so at any point you decide it's not for you, it's one click and you're done.
I touched on just briefly some of the competition that you'll have in the UK in the form of Love Film, who are another DVD rental by post service, and they've started doing stuff online. They've got an established customer base in the UK already. How are you going to tempt me over from my subscription there to what you do, or how are you going to convert people who already have the opportunity to be video on demand customers in the country but haven't yet? What are you going to be do that's different, and how are you going to get me there?
Content offering that Netflix has is substantially complementary to the content offering that Love Film has in the streaming space. A lot of those deals are exclusive, and so what they have, we don't. What we have, they don't. So, in fact, there's no reason that a subscriber shouldn't try out both at once and decide who has the most compelling content offering, who can deliver it with the highest quality, and which service makes sense. We've been focused on streaming very heavily since 2007. And I think we've built a lot of very smart technology to deliver a really good streaming picture. The idea of starting extremely quickly with a low bitrate stream and then quickly upgrading to a high def stream, or as high as your bandwidth will support, and then being able to surf the bandwidth that you've got if there's congestion, the picture just degrades from high def to something slightly worse. And when the congestion is eliminated, we'll go right back up to high def, all seamless. We actually serve from multiple different CDNs. In fact, the streaming client can pick the CDN that's got the least congestion and can switch dynamically from one CDN to another in order to assure the best picture all the way through. And I think that kind of improvement that we've been making over the last many years of exploring streaming in the US and other countries will be a substantial advantage, and that will deliver a better quality experience to our consumers.
There's quite a diverse number of sites that could be in competition with you in the UK. TV on demand sites, for instance, are the main things I'm thinking about. Lots of stuff to watch online in the UK. Is that going to be quite tough to try and beat? Because the iPlayer is quite a easy sell for people if they want to watch something online.
We compete by having a complementary content offering. The BBC iPlayer is very much about recent episode catch-up, and our proposition is much more about full, complete seasons. We have a lot of Top Gear. I think we have 13 seasons of Top Gear that go all the way from season one, episode one, all the way up through the last complete season that's out there. But so that sort of gives you the opportunity to catch up on old stuff, to binge, watch four or five episodes a night. You get into 24 on a Friday night, you might well find yourself still watching it Sunday night and three seasons later having watched it back-to-back all weekend long.
But, for instance, I believe that Channel 4 is one of your partners, and they have a lot of their back catalogue on their website, and there are certain things that mean the BBC can't. But, for instance, how do you compete with that? Why would someone want to come to you first for that content that's through your site rather than going to someone like them?
Well, I think we package it in a very convenient and easily accessible way. We deliver it to a wide range of devices with very high quality. And then we have a fabulous discovery system, recommendation system, and a social discovery system that help people to find content that's really interesting. And so regardless of where that content comes from, we believe that customers will find a lot of value in Netflix as a vehicle for discovering stuff in the deep catalog of things that they might not even have known about, and come to us to enjoy that. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't go somewhere else to enjoy a very specific thing, but I think that we have a lot of value to offer.
Is the future for Netflix in maybe doing other things, like being a platform for other services like music and games or things? Would you ever think that you could see yourself in one of those markets?
No, we feel like that we want to be very, very focused on filmed entertainment. And there's a number of properties of TV programs and of film that makes it very attractive for us. Typically, the value of a TV program is very long. It really, you know, unless you're in current season, if you're in catch-up mode, it doesn't matter whether you discover it today or next week or next month. So we can derive value from a content licensing deal over many months or years even. And that isn't true, for example, for sports. It's not nearly as true for reality TV. Game shows and things like that, you kind of know who won. It's not news tomorrow. And so we think that for us, focusing very heavily on that specific filmed entertainment area is very important, because it allows to get really good with the personalization, with the social discovery, with maximizing the value of the catalog we've got. And further, it keeps us out of competition with other providers who might be looking to provide a similar service in sports, for example, or a similar service in music or games. I think that you know, the film space, the TV program space, is quite big enough to secure our ambitions for a long time to come, and we're better off being tremendously focused and being very, very successful in that space than trying to branch out into adjacent areas that may not leverage our core competence.
Okay. Individual film studios and broadcasters and so on have gone with individual services, and you have certain services that you have signed up. How far do you think you are from a catalogue that spans, say, the major film studios and broadcasters? How far is it before you think you get there? Because I feel as a consumer, you kind of are aware of the holes in the service when you kind of look for films that you want to see. And the best thing is when you know you can go there and you can get it.
I think that's an interesting question. I think it's slightly the wrong question to ask, because it's going to be a long time until anyone can amass a comprehensive collection of content for streaming delivery in a subscription format, at the very least. You know, the right question to answer is not, can I get a specific piece of content? Because the answer is often going to be no. The right question to answer is, there something entertaining that's really going to engage me tonight when I want to turn the thing on? And so we depend far more, I think, than a Spotify on having a discovery vehicle that allows us to surface, for you perhaps, fun sci-fi movies. And if we can identify the very specific things that meet individual tastes and desires, and we can raise something up that's interesting to watch, we don't have to have everything. Having everything is a tremendously expensive proposition. You know, ultimately, the owner of the content, when it's new and hot, can charge a ridiculous amount of money for that. But by being able to leverage a narrower catalog, but that always has something great to watch, by means of interesting recommendation technology, I think we can have a very successful business.
We just mentioned on Twitter that we were having you in today, and asked if our followers had anything to ask you. And so we've got a few questions here. One from Stuart Evertson, who said, could you ask why there's no Boxy app for Netflix yet?
There is a Boxy app for Netflix in the US. I think it's just a matter of time until we're able to make that available in the UK. I'm not certain exactly where that stands today.
Okay. Carl Bradshaw, on a similar theme, asked, when will the Apple TV Netflix service be up and running? Impressed with HD on the PS3 and iPad, by the way. It looks excellent.
Well, thank you. The Apple TV did push live this morning at, midnight. It took a few hours to ripple through availability through the whole country, but I've seen it. It's generating significant traffic today already.
Okay, so Carl just needs to keep checking. And Ashley Allen asks, would love to know if the Xbox app does 1080p and how much bandwidth that'll chew through.
The Xbox is 720p, I believe, today. We expect to be delivering a 1080p upgrade at some point in the near future. In general, the encodes for all the devices are pretty similar. You're looking at about 4 megabits a second sort of 2.5 to 4 megabits a second for delivering a 720p and 4 to 6 megabits a second to deliver a 1080p. And by the way, you can get a standard def DVD quality picture at about 1.5 megabits per second. And we deliver for TVs and tablets all the way down to, I think, 250 kilobits, and for mobiles all the way down to about 100 kilobits. And so we have really a range of quality that spans, you know, the tiny screen all the way up to the 60-inch.
Okay. So finally, then, I just wanted to ask about social TV, which we've touched on earlier in our conversation. We've just seen Sky today, and they're buying into a social TV service, this thing called ZBox, which complements your viewing. And there's a lot of talk around social TV and multi-screening, doing things while you're watching TV. I just wondered if you could tell me a little bit more about what you're doing in that area. Are you doing anything to complement your watching, as well as getting recommendations, anything like that?
We experiment a little bit with Xbox, with sort of simultaneous viewing. And we found the logistics of consumers setting up a simultaneous viewing session to be not that compelling. So we've chosen instead to go for more of the longer-term discovery thing. So what my friends have been watching over the last week, over the last month, provides a wealth of opportunities for me to see new ideas that I might be interested in as well. Now, of course, some of my friends have appalling taste, and I might choose to ignore them altogether. But at least some out of my hundreds of Facebook friends actually have pretty good taste, and sometimes they discover something that I hadn't seen that's interesting. And when we blend the Facebook-mediated social discovery stuff with the algorithmic discovery stuff, we're able to apply the algorithms to figure out which of my friends are the most relevant to choose from when presenting me ideas, and of the suggestions coming from those friends, which ones are most likely to appeal to me. For example, I haven't watched them already, that kind of stuff. So I think there's really a lot of potential there. We still have, I think, a lot of interesting work to do to maximize the value of that, and it's going to be an active research area for us as we evolve the product forward from now.
That was Neil Hunt from Netflix. Now, here's producer Scott Colley with this week's news.
Intel has made its first move into the smartphone market by announcing alliances with Lenovo and Motorola Mobility at CES in Las Vegas this week. Intel chief executive Paul Otellini showed off the K800, a new device from the Chinese PC manufacturer. Running Google's Android, the Lenovo phone will use a Medfield generation of Intel's low-power Atom processors that were previously used in netbook computers. Intel said that will give the phone's high-quality graphics and processing performance while allowing long battery life. The K800 will launch with the China Unicom carrier in the US later this year. Samsung took the chance to announce a number of new products at CES, as well as flag up some already familiar elsewhere in the world. Samsung's plan for 2012 included more smart TV, with a promise that models bought now will in future be upgradable through a simple add-on part, 3D content for TVs, a range of Wi-Fi-enabled cameras, a new Ultrabook, and an impressive 55-inch Super OLED TV. Elsewhere, in non-CES news, Virgin Media is to invest more than £100 million on a program that will more than double the broadband speed for most of its 4 million internet customers. Following tests of up to 1.5 gigabits per second at a trial in East London, Virgin is to spend £110 million on the 18-month upgrade programme. Three new features will be part of Google's next update to search, the company has announced. Google will now show you results of information that's personal, such as Google Plus content. So if you're looking for holiday suggestions, posts and pictures from friends will show up in the results. It will also highlight user profiles in search results and in the Google Instant Autocomplete suggestions. And prominent people and communities who discuss the subject you're looking for will also appear in results. The changes mean new privacy settings, so if you want to opt out, take action now. BSkyB has taken a 10% stake in ZBox, an app that combines social networking, live program information, and real-time viewing figures, just 2 months after it was launched by the former BBC technology chief responsible for developing the iPlayer, Anthony Rose. ZBox allows users to see who else is watching shows and interact with tweets and updates. BSkyB's stake in the company gives them exclusive UK rights to integrate the technology into its own mobile apps, and later this year the company will integrate ZBox into apps for services including Sky Plus and Sky Go.
Thanks, Scott. You can read up on all these stories and the latest headlines throughout the week at guardian.co.uk/technology. That's it for this week. Next week, Charles will still be away, so it will be me on my lonesome in this big studio again. But we will hear from Charles and what happened at CES then. We're also making tentative plans to host a live Tech Weekly podcast recording later this year. And if you'd like to register your interest as an audience member, please do not bring Rotten Tomatoes. Then let us know at techweekly@guardian.co.uk. I'm Alex Kratosky. And that was this week's podcast. Look forward to seeing you next Tuesday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.